going to go ahead and get started. Vic is not on the call tonight. He is on an airplane on his way to Europe. I don't know exactly what he's doing over there, but I do know that he called me yesterday and told me that he's not going to be able to be with us tonight. He's going to be on an airplane, even as we speak, on his way to Europe. So we're going to do this without Vic, and without further delay, we're going to go ahead and get started. And wanted to just open it up, first of all, for any thoughts, comments, concerns, etc., from anything that's taken place in the last few weeks, comments of things that you've been trying or doing that have been good. If you have any questions or clarifications that we can take care of from the past few weeks, we can do that as well right now. So if you have a question, comment, concern, etc., feel free to bring it up now before we go ahead and get into the session for tonight.
I haven't got any concerns, Chris. This is Mel in South Australia.
Yeah.
But I've found it's been very enlightening. I'm in mature years and been my own boss all the way along and have, do it myself. If something I wanted done, well, I'd find a way and do it myself. But it's been great on the last 3 weeks with you to really get into it and think, and have someone offering other suggestions. And I've found it's been terrific. It's
good.
Brought things out with me that, they've been sitting there, but you don't bring them to mind all the time.
Yeah. Good. Appreciate that. Anybody else? Any comments or questions? Well, let's go ahead and get started then. We've been talking, obviously, the last few weeks about leadership, secrets of influence, character traits of extraordinary leaders, and that type of thing. And I want to just reiterate again, so we're all coming from the same page here, what it is that I believe to be the basis for leadership. And the basis for leadership, as I understand it and as I believe it to be, is simply the ability to influence or persuade. And as we do that, as we understand that the ability to lead people is simply the ability to influence or persuade them, then we begin to ask the question, you know, what is it that enables me to influence or persuade? Sometimes I think leadership is such a big word that brings in so many different connotations to it that when we simplify it down to influencing or persuading, then it gives us a little more grasp on it. And so if you remember correctly, we've been talking about how people will either consciously or subconsciously decide or make their decisions whether they're going to follow you based on a couple of different things. Well, there's lots of little things that we talked about that will that can play a role in whether or not people allow you to influence them or not, but ultimately, there's two primary factors that go into whether or not somebody is going to allow you to influence them or not. And these are factors that can go up or down. They're not either or, but they're sliding scales. And to the degree that people see these in you, they see these two traits in you, they will allow you to influence them. If you have super high levels of both of these, then of course you're going to have a super high level of influence. If you have a mid-range or lower level, you'll have a mid-range or lower level ability to influence. If you have neither, or if you have one without the other, you're going to also experience quite a bit of lack in your ability to influence or persuade people, because people are looking for both of these things in the people who they decide to allow to influence them. So, anybody remember what they are? And want to share them with us. What are the two main characteristics that people are looking for in people who they will allow to influence them? Anybody
like
remember
your
that?
Your character?
Yep, character is one. What are the others?
And skills?
Character and skills, exactly. Thank you very much. Yeah, character and skills. And the way I like to put it is they want to see who you are and what you can do. Character is about who you are as a person, and do they have respect, and do they have trust, and do they have relationship. Skills is about what you can do and how well you can lead them, how well you can accomplish the job, etc. So people are looking at who you are, but what you can do. And if you remember correctly, I said if you're a great person, character-wise, but have no skills, people won't follow you. If you have high skills and no character, people may follow you for a while, but ultimately, because leadership is based on trust, they will again pull back their allowing you to influence them. Ultimately, we need to have a high level of both character and skills. And so last week we talked about character, and we covered a number of very positive things that are good for us to have in our lives as far as who we are. We talked about ultimately integrity, the ability to accept and embrace change, being risk takers, being tenacious, catalytic, etc. This week we're going to be talking about, or in this session we're going to be talking about, the top skills of extraordinary leaders. So why don't we dive right into that? We're going to talk about the top skills of extraordinary leaders. The first one is that an extraordinary leader understands the communication process. They understand the communication process. What I mean by that, you'll see as you process through your notes there, it says communication is a process to bring others along, and it takes skill. See, one of the things that I think gets leaders kind of in a bind is that leaders typically are go-getters. You know, leaders are the type, as we talked about last week, they're tenacious, they're catalytic, they're initiators, they're those types of people. But what separates leaders from followers is that followers aren't. Followers need to be prodded, poked, pushed, pulled. They need to be spoken to over and over and over and over again in order to get them to move. That's why they're followers. If they were go-getters, if they were self-starters, if they were self-motivated, then they would most likely become leaders. So there's a fundamental difference between leaders and followers, but what happens is leaders typically think that everybody else will respond the way they would respond. So you might be a self-starter, and you look at a person who's a follower, who works for you or whatever, and you say, you know, I can't figure out why this person doesn't just do it. I can't figure out why when I say to this person to do something, they don't just do it. And it's because they are looking at life and work fundamentally different than the way that the leader is. And so communication isn't just a one-time process where we say, you do this, and then they all just do it. Communication is a process rather than an event. And that's imperative for us as leaders to understand. When we think about this process, and I think we covered it last time, but I want to cover it again briefly and move you through the notes that you have. As we go through this, I'm amazed, given the process, that any good communication ever happens. And here's the process. I think we talked about this last week, but we're going to cover it again. Number one, when we're talking, it's not just our words to their ears. That's not the simple process of communication. Communication, you'll see there, number one, says starts in the heart. And it starts in the heart of the person who's communicating. And the heart, by the heart I mean the emotions, the will, that part of us that is ethereal, you can't, you know, touch it or put it into a beaker. But it starts inside of us. It's where we feel. From there, it moves to the mind. It starts in the passions, but it moves to the logic. And at every single one of these stages, there is the potential for breakdown. And that's imperative for us as leaders to understand, because it will make us focus in on and take more seriously the communication process. It moves to the mind. Starts in the heart, moves to the mind. And the mind has to then formulate what the heart feels. It has to formulate it into words, has to put it into the right, into the right logic. From the mind, it moves to the tongue. And we have to say what it is that we're thinking. Now you might think, well, that's not, you know, too hard of a problem. But how often have you heard somebody, maybe even yourself, say, I'm just not saying what I'm thinking. I'm just not saying what I'm thinking. And I always think to myself, well, come on, it's only 4 inches from your brain to your tongue. It doesn't take a lot to get lost there. But that's what happens, is sometimes the breakdown is just trying to say what the mind is thinking. So again, at every stage, there's the opportunity for the message to be configured differently, to come across differently. The fourth stage in the process of communication is not the ear. And a lot, that's what a lot of people say. A lot of people say, well, it's the ear. But what happens is that in number four, the communication moves through the circumstances. Moves through the circumstances. The circumstances can be anything. It can be culture. It could be the culture you're in. It could be the circumstances you're in. It could be the economic circumstances. It could be the room, how loud the room is. If there's lots of noise, they may not hear you. There may be differences between the people who are speaking, religious differences, cultural differences, worldview differences, etc. And all of the communication has to move through those circumstances, which has a tremendous ability to break down the communication process. From the circumstances that it moves through, it ends and is dependent upon the ear and the ability of the ear to hear the words correctly. Okay, and that, again, that is a difference that can happen. You can hear a word, and it might sound like another word, which can change the message completely. I don't know how many of you have ever played the game that you started when you're kids, where you sit in a circle, you got maybe 10 people, and one person starts with a sentence, and they tell it to the second, tell it to the third, tell it to the fourth, tell it to the fifth. By the time it gets to the 10th person, the message is completely different than the message that started. The reason why is that it depended upon the ability of the person to say it exactly and the other person to hear it exactly and then translate it and then say it again and hear it again, say it again, all the way through this process. So number five, communication is dependent upon the ear. Number six, it then passes through the mind of the hearer. What does the person think of it? How do they interpret the words? What do they think of the words that are used? Do they understand it? Can they comprehend it? That's another thing that helps the communication or hinders the communication. And then lastly, it's interpreted by the emotions. And that ultimately means how do they feel about what's being communicated. You know, for example, a leader may have to communicate that there's going to be layoffs in a large company. And they talk about layoffs. And they say that, and the circumstances might be that that it's very bad economic atmosphere, et cetera. And what happens? People get fearful. Well, what do they hear? They hear that everybody's going to get fired, and then they become fearful. And what does it mean to them in their minds about being fired? And then what does it mean about the emotions? Are they going to get fired? Are they going to be able to provide for their family? Does that mean that even though they're not going to get fired, that their friend's going to get fired? And how do they feel about their friend getting fired? And do they think that it's fair or not fair? Or, you know, all of these things can be wrapped up, which brings me to this point. Understanding that the process can be so difficult, it's imperative for us to communicate more and more regularly. It means that we need to communicate the message over and over and over again in many different modes. In his book, Leading Change, John Cotter, professor at Harvard Business School, says that one of the problems of leaders is that they under-communicate the message, sometimes by a factor of 100, sometimes even by a factor of 1,000 or thousands, depending upon how big the company is. If you can imagine a company like General Electric having to communicate something, how many millions of times the message has to be communicated, either broadly or one-on-one or in teamwork, etc., for people to catch on with the message that's being driven down from the top down through the ranks. And what happens is leaders, because they're thinking, well, I would have gotten this a long time ago, they end up thinking that they're beating a dead horse. And so their temptation is to back off, saying, oh, I've been saying this and saying this and saying this. The problem is because of all the difficulty of communication, people aren't getting it. They may not even heard you the first time, let alone heard you right, let alone processed it correctly, let alone felt right about it or allowed their emotions to process and then come to some conclusions that might enable them to accept and move forward with the decisions, particularly if they're hard decisions that are being communicated. So understand that is one of the most important skills of an extraordinary leader. Now, there's some ways to become a better communicator, and there are two things that I would encourage you to do. The first is to better your speaking. Now, leaders don't have to be professional speakers. They don't have to be motivational speakers, big dynamic speakers, etc. The fact is, most people aren't. When you take the people who are extraordinary speakers in this world and you divide them into the amount of people there are in the world, very, 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 very few people are great orators. And because of that, you don't have to put a lot of pressure on yourself. However, that being said, it is important for us to always better our speaking in terms of our enunciation, our articulation, our vocabulary, our ability to formulate a message and to speak it coherently. Those are some things that we can do. There's lots of different ways to better your speaking. You can practice yourself. You can join a Toastmasters. You can get a speaking coach. There's lots of different ways that you can better your speaking, but that would be one way to improve the process. The second one would be to better your writing, your ability to write, and that can be as simple as just starting to journal. It can be as much as taking a creative writing or a business writing course from a local community college or a local university. But better your writing. If you're going to be serious about business and success in business, if you're going to be serious about being an extraordinary leader, you would do well over some time to improve your ability to communicate by both your speaking and your writing. Above all, there's three things that I'd like you to hear from this. The first is to communicate regularly. Communicate regularly. If you're trying to bring about a new vision statement or a mission statement to your organization, you're going to need to have to communicate that regularly so that people get it, so they understand it, so they memorize it, so they learn it, so they live it, so they believe it. All those things take time. The second one is to communicate clearly. Make sure that people are understanding you correctly, that they're not hearing something else. I'm amazed at how many times people will ask the question, and they'll come back and say, did you mean this? And you think, wow, how in the world did they ever get that I meant that? And so you go back and say, no, what I meant was this. And they say, of course, thanks for clearing that up. Now imagine if they hadn't have asked what they could have believed you said, and how that affects your ability to move groups forward, influence, persuade them to a common goal if they're not getting it. So communicate clearly and make sure you're communicating clearly. And then the third one is to communicate passionately. And by that I simply mean that if you're excited about it when you're communicating it, that's going to stoke the fires of the people underneath of you who are also expected to become passionate about what it is that you're communicating. So you need to be passionate about it if they're going to be passionate about it. Okay, number two, here's a second skill of extraordinary leaders, and that is an extraordinary leader sees the end long before others. Now this is an issue of vision. It's the ability to see the end. If you think of Stephen Covey's, one of his seven habits of highly effective people, he says that that highly effective people begin with the end in mind. Well, if you're going to begin with the end in mind, that sort of begs the question, and that is, don't you already have to know what the end is? Don't you have to be able to see the end? And that's true. An extraordinary leader sees the end or the goal long before others. And, you know, your followers, for the most part, aren't spending their week thinking about what the end goal is. The followers are thinking about how to get through the week and what they're going to do on the weekend. The leaders are the people who are looking for the end, they're looking for the goals, they're looking for the outcomes. So my question to you would be, are you spending much time attempting to see the end before other people do? The question is, can you dream it? Can you dream about what the end is going to be? Can you be intuitive to know what is coming? And those are things that you can develop by making projections. You know, you might say, well, I just don't know what to do or how to do it. Begin to make projections. Begin to think down the road. Begin to think big picture and ask yourself, what would I like the end to be? Where do I see this process going? And project out 6 months, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years, and see where you're going. And begin to see it in your mind's eye and see it as your vision. Extraordinary leaders see where the possibilities lie, and then they use their ability to influence to move other people towards that goal. Seize the end long before others. Number three, the ability to define goals for yourself and for others. The ability to define goals for self and others. Number one there, it says, see where you need to go as an organization. So as a leader, it's your job, either by yourself or, if possible, with your leadership team. It might be a board, it might be your spouse, if you have a home-based business, whatever you need to do, to see where you need to go as an organization. Then from there, number two is to see where each person fits in. So to be able to look at each of the people who works for you or follows you and to see where that individual person fits in. It's imperative for us to begin to look at people as individuals and not just en masse, because people are individuals. They have different strengths. They have different weaknesses. They have different abilities. They have all these things that are different about them. So it's important for us to see where each of those people fit in. Number three is to see what it takes from each of those people. What will it take from each of your followers to be able to get your organization to the goals that you've determined? From there, number four, you break each person's tasks down into understandable and achievable goals. I'll say that again. Break each person's tasks down into understandable and achievable goals. Now, you can do this with each individual person. Sit down with them and say, okay, here's what we need you to do. Here's how you fit in. And you're defining goals for them. You're defining tasks, etc., for them. You're sitting down with them, and you, if you have a very large organization, you might say, well, I certainly can't sit down with all these people. Well, then you need to develop another layer of leadership so that you have people who can sit down with those people. And that's just a basic aspect of management, to be able to have enough people who can lead people into the, basically what you're creating is small groups as you move yourself down, small groups of accountability. By establishing leadership at every single level. You get in there with each individual person and you talk about your goals, and the goals have to be understandable. They have to know what it is that they're trying to accomplish, and they have to be achievable. We talked a little bit about that last time. They have to be stretching enough to inspire and encourage them, but they have to be achievable enough that they don't become discouraged by their inability to achieve goals. So they have to be big enough to inspire, but small enough to be achieved. Number five is to follow up and evaluate. I am constantly amazed at how many people who are running even regular, you know, to large size businesses, not just small businesses, who do not follow up and evaluate. They say, this is what I need you to do, but they don't have a system of evaluation. If you're going to define goals for yourself and for others, you have to measure those goals and come back and evaluate those goals. You might need to do a weekly evaluation. You might need to do a 90-day evaluation. You might need to do a monthly evaluation. I don't know what kind of evaluation you need to do. Only you can determine that. But it needs to be enough so that you're keeping accountability high and you're moving people toward the goals. You don't want your evaluations to come so far apart that people start to slip and they go months without being held accountable toward moving toward their goals. You want to do it enough so that they are accountable and they move toward their goals. Number four, the ability to set strategy and a course of action. The ability to set strategy and a course of action. Michael Porter, also a professor at Harvard Business School, says that too many people focus exclusively on the product or the service to the neglect of strategy for getting the product into the hands of the consumer. So ability to set strategy and a course of action. I don't know if I've mentioned this in this course yet or not, but Fortune magazine about 3-4 years ago did a cover article called Why CEOs Fail. And they started out with an assumption. They started out with the fact that they thought that the answer was going to be a lack of vision, because vision is one of the biggest things that people talk about in leadership. They thought that there would be a lack of vision. But what they found out as they studied these CEOs who had been successful and those who had failed was it wasn't vision, a lack of vision. It was a lack of execution. It was a lack of developing a strategy and acting upon it, a course of action that would carry out the vision. Lots of people had a vision. Lots of people developed a vision and they, put it on the wall of every single person in their offices, and, you know, they had all this stuff, in terms of vision, but they weren't executing. They didn't have a strategy. They didn't have a course of action. Here's what a strategy gives you. Strategy first and foremost gives you a plan. Do you have a well detailed plan of how you're going to move your organization forward to achieve the goals and the vision that you've established as the leader. The second thing that that strategy does is it gives you goals. It tells you what the goals are. The course of action tells you what the goals are and how you're going to move through them. And they'll be phased-in goals. You'll have short-term goals, mid-range goals, long-term goals, and then probably far-reaching goals. It also gives you boundaries. One of the nice things about setting a strategy is that it not only tells you what you're going to do, but it also tells you what you're not going to do. And that is just as important as telling you what to do, because in our day and age, with so many opportunities out there and so many options pulling at our minds and asking us to do them and be involved in them and that type of thing, the strategy, the course of action, helps us because it tells us not just what we need to do, but it gives us permission to not do what we weren't going to do or what we didn't want to do. It gives us those boundaries. The next thing it does is it gives us the right direction. It moves us in the right direction. It means that we're not going west when we should be going east. It means we're not going south when we should be going north. It's moving us in the right direction. The last one there is it says it gives us a push toward progress, a push toward progress. Anytime we have a strategy and a course of action, it's going to be pushing us toward the goal. And if we don't have a strategy or we don't have a course of action, what our tendency to do is to sit or to stagnate, to find a comfortable level, as we've mentioned before, and then stay there. And that's what followers do. As leaders, if we develop this ability to define strategy, to set strategy, and to develop a course of action for ourselves and for our organization, for individuals in that organization, it's going to give us what we need, the plan, the goals, the boundaries, and a push toward progress. It's important for us to do that. So I would ask you in the coming week, as you're looking back through the materials and listening to the conference call again, when you get it, is do I have a strategy? Or is it just some big end goal that I'm hoping our organization will get to? Have I laid out a plan on how I'm going to do this? It's important for us. Number five is the ability to teach others. The ability to teach others. So here's a question for you. What is the definition of teach? The definition of teach is simply this: the ability and the action to pass on information and or skills in such a way that the learner understands and can apply the truth. I'll read that again. The ability and action to pass on information and or skills in such a way that the learner understands and can apply the truth. Now, this isn't just a classroom setting. See, when I think of the word teach, initially I think most people think of, you know, a teacher in front of a classroom. But we're not just talking about a classroom setting. We're talking about teachable moments where people do something wrong and you come up next to them and say, hey, I'd like to kind of tell you a better way of doing that. And you teach them in that teachable moment. It might be in a team setting. It might be out on a ropes course where you're doing some sort of a, you know, kind of an outward bound program where you're teaching and people are learning. It's not just that classroom setting, although classroom setting is good as well. But when you think about your ability to teach others, if you are the leader, you need to somehow learn and develop your ability to pass on information and or skills in such a way that the learner understands and then can apply the truth. You know, General Electric CEO or former CEO of General Electric, Jack Welch, spent an inordinate amount of time teaching, and specifically he was teaching leadership. He developed a whole organization filled with leaders. In fact, if you look around the business world, you see that as Jack Welch raised up these leaders and taught them, they left General Electric and went on and began to become CEOs of some of the largest companies on the face of the earth, all because they learned from a great CEO who took the time to teach them. General Electric has their own leadership university, their own General Electric University, where almost all employees of General Electric at one time or another find themselves, and they go there to learn. And the flip side of looking at that is not just learning, but the fact that General Electric, one of the greatest companies to ever be organized and developed, had at its very roots a passion for teaching other people, passing along information so they understand it and they can apply it. When you teach, you are influencing, you're persuading. And when you influence and persuade, you are leading. So I would encourage you, whether you have a small little company, small little organization, or a very large one, is to ask yourself, what is my ability to teach? Am I good at communicating truth so that other people can understand them and apply them? And you may have to do some development that way. You may have to, take some courses or pick up some CDs or tapes or books or whatever on the topic of learning styles. Different people have different learning styles. You might want to pick up, again, as we mentioned earlier, becoming a better communicator, your ability to speak, your ability to write, etc. All right, let's move on to number six. Number six is the ability to inspire other people. The ability to inspire other people. Now, somebody might say, but I'm not a gregarious, rah-rah type of person. I'm not a cheerleader. I don't know what you mean by inspire, but I'm not inspirational. But you know what? The fact is you don't have to be a rah-rah cheerleader type of person to whip people into a frenzy. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about that kind of thing, because the fact is, just like we were talking about, most people aren't great orators, most people aren't great inspirers. So here's some ways that you can inspire. Number one is your vision. Your vision should be inspiring. It should be inspirational. Remember we said in the last couple sessions vision is the spectacular that causes us to carry out the mundane. Vision is the spectacular thing. It inspires people. It says, yeah, that's the vision. I want to go there. I want to accomplish that. Secondly, one of the things you can do to inspire people is to give purpose. And people, I believe, are truly motivated by having a purpose, a deep, meaningful purpose. And a great vision will bring great purpose, especially if we communicate it in that way. Number three is your commitment and passion for the vision and the purpose. Your commitment and passion for the vision and the purpose. And what I mean by that is, if you're not committed to it, if you're not passionate about it, then they're not going to be. But if you are, that in and of itself becomes inspiring. People begin to look at you and say, wow, she is really committed to this. That's great. You've lit a little bit of a fire there. The fourth one is to paint the picture of the reward. Paint the picture of the reward so that people can see what it is. Use stories. Use word pictures. Let people see it in their mind. Don't just give them facts and figures, but paint the picture in the mind's eye of the rewards that people can get. And what that does is, see, numbers and facts speak to the mind. Stories and pictures speak to the emotions. And it's emotions that move people. They need to be able to justify it with logic, as we've mentioned before, but they make their decisions with their emotions that justify it with logic. So, the ability to inspire other people. Do you have a strong vision? Do you have a strong purpose? Are you yourself committed and passionate about that vision and purpose? And are you taking the time to paint the picture of the reward? Number seven is delegation. Delegation. One of the greatest skills of a leader is to delegate. There's an old proverb, I love it. It says, one can put 1,000 to flight, but two can put 10,000 to flight. What that means is that when we add other people, when we add other leaders, when we delegate leadership responsibility and tasks to other people, we don't just add to our ability to carry the organization forward. We multiply. It grows exponentially. See, essentially in this math, 1 + 1 is not the right equation. It's 1 times 2 or times 3. It's not 2 + 2, it's 2 times 2. And those numbers begin to grow exponentially. 3 plus 3 is a lot less than 3 times 3. And that's what we're talking about when we delegate and get other people moving and working on behalf of the vision. So delegate. When you delegate and you involve other people, your effectiveness grows exponentially. And here's why. Delegation enables you to work from your strengths. It enables you to work from your strengths. And the more you as a leader can work from your strengths rather than working from your weaknesses, the better opportunity you're going to have to be the best leader that you're going to be able to be. It also, delegation, also allows you to cover your weaknesses. The way you cover your weaknesses is by giving that task or that job or that process to somebody for whom it's not a weakness, but it's a strength. So you're working from your strengths, and you're taking those things that are your weaknesses, and you're giving them to somebody for whom it's not a weakness, but a strength. For example, I'm not a particularly detail-oriented person. I'm kind of a big-picture, visionary type of person. And what I need to help me is somebody who's much more detail-oriented. In fact, I would make the argument that every time you see a great organization with a visionary leader that has been successful, you will always be able to find a secondary person who kind of flies below the radar, and they are the detail person. Anytime you see an extraordinary, out-front, gregarious, visionary leader there, who has been successful, you're going to see that there was a person behind the scenes that was taking care of business and covering the weaknesses, which is usually, for those kinds of people, detail-oriented kinds of things. Lastly, delegation allows you to work on your priorities. When you're not working out of your weaknesses, when you're delegating things that are less important to you, it enables you to have the time to work on your priorities. Now, how does this work for a small business person? Well, for me, I don't do any of my finances. I pay the checks. Other than that, I turn all my accounting, all my bookkeeping, all that stuff over to an accountant who I have a great relationship with. He does all my taxes. He does all my paying to the state and to the federal. You know, he does all that kind of stuff. Why? Because it's a weakness of mine, and it takes me away from the things that I do best, which is speak, write, and create relationships. So it's important for even small business people to say, what is it that I do best? And then outsource that as soon as you can afford it. Outsource the things that you're weak at so you can focus in on the things that you are best at. Let's talk about number 8, the ability to develop leaders, and I would say develop future leaders. An extraordinary leader is always in it for the long run. Even if he or she won't be there, they set the organization up for success down the road. So an extraordinary leader has the ability to develop other leaders. Now, you don't know how long you're going to be around. I mean, unfortunately, any one of us could die tonight in our sleep. We'd get hit by a bus tomorrow on the way to work. But, you know, hopefully that's not going to happen. We're all going to live nice, long lives. But the fact is that we don't know how long we're going to be around. But the organization is going to outlive us, and the organization needs leaders. So it's our job to train and to develop future leaders. It's one of the core skills of an extraordinary leader is to train and develop future leaders. So here's a few ways for you to develop future leaders. Here's a way for you to develop future leaders. Number one is to identify them. Look out into your group and say, who are my future leaders? Who are the people who have the ability to become future leaders? Secondly, let them know that you believe that they can lead. Take them aside and say, you know what, Johnny, you know what, Susie, I think down the road, if you do it right, you're going to really have a tremendous ability to lead. When you speak that kind of truth into their mind and into their heart, it's going to touch them. It's going to light a little fire inside of them. It's going to enable them to say, hey, you know what, maybe I can become a leader. And you let them know that you believe that they can lead, and that's going to foster that inside of them. Number three is to give them learning tools. You know, get them learning the things that they need to learn. Send them to seminars, buy them tapes, give them books, reward them for reading the books if you need to. You know, pay them $100 to read a book if they get the book done, $50 to read the book. And you might say, well, that's an awful lot of money because I could pay $20 for the book and $50 for paying them to read the book. But the question is, if you pick the right books, wouldn't that person produce more than $70 worth of reward for you? Well, chances are they're going to, because the better they become at leading other people, leading organizations, leading processes, leading people, influencing, It's going to bring back that dollar amount to your bottom line and way beyond it. So get them learning. The old saying, you know what that's going to cost me to do? Well, think about this. What's it going to cost you to not do it? Number four, give them opportunities to lead. From time to time, you might take one of those people and just say, you know, it's time for you to step up into this leadership meeting and lead. It's time for you to teach a little bit. It's time for you to take this person aside and show them exactly how it's done. And so one of the best things you can do is to give people small opportunities at the beginning, but small opportunities nonetheless, to lead. And then afterwards, you know, you teach them and you say, well, this is what you did great, and this is what you might want to work on, and that kind of thing. But you're giving them opportunities to lead. The fifth one is to develop a leadership training program. Now, initially people think, oh, big leadership training program. If you have the money to do a big leadership program, that's great. But most people don't. A leadership training program could be as little as 4 books a year, where you assign them the books to read every quarter, and then you get together and you talk about it. You get together and you go through the material, and you're beginning to train people. Anything from as simple as that all the way up to a full-blown in-house, fully developed training program. But if you want people to learn to become better leaders, if you want to develop other leaders, you, as a leader, have to establish the training program. So let's go back through them again. Number one is understanding the communication process. Number two is to be able to see the end long before others. Number three is the ability to define goals for self and others. Number four, the ability to set strategy and a course of action. Number five, the ability to teach others. Number six, the ability to inspire others. Number seven, delegation. And number eight, the ability to develop leaders, future leaders. So, with that, we are concluding the 4 weeks together. We're concluding this session, and I want to open it up to any questions that you might have, questions or clarifications that we can make on the topic that we've covered tonight. So let's, if you want, you can, I believe it's star six, and that will unmute it, and you guys will be good to go to ask any sort of clarifying questions if you need them. So we'll open it up for anybody.
Chris?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Cindy in Phoenix.
Hi there.
I have a question. At the beginning this evening, you mentioned a Harvard professor, I believe you said, that had a book that explains you need to repeat things 100 times or 1,000 times or something, if I understood it correctly. What is that book?
The book is Leading Change, and I truly believe that if anybody is serious about leadership, they need to read the book. It's called Leading Change by John Kotter, K-O-T-T-E-R. I've met John, I've had lunch with him, just the two of us, which was an extraordinary opportunity. He is one of the most brilliant minds on leadership on the earth today, and a great researcher and a great writer. And that book is called Leading Change. It's 8 steps that they've found that are imperative to leading a company or an organization through change. The follow-up book to that, which is fascinating as well, is called The Heart of Change. And that takes the same 8 stages, and it shows the emotional aspect. It tells the stories of what took place in organizations as they began to apply those 8 principles. It's sort of the emotional heart aspect of change. So Leading Change and The Heart of Change, both by John Kotter, K-O-T-T-E-R, Harvard Business School.
Thank you.
Sure thing. Any other questions?
Chris?
Yes.
Yes, so, you know, the book, The Leadership Engine.
Yes.
With the CEO of GE, where do you get them?
Leadership Engine is actually, it's written by a guy named Noel Tichy, T-I-S-C-H-Y, I think. But you could get that from Amazon. It's called The Leadership Engine. It's a fantastic book, and I would encourage you to read it. He has done a lot of work with General Electric, and so it has an emphasis there. But Noel Tichy, I think, is actually a professor at University of Michigan. Okay, folks, it's been a great opportunity for me and a great pleasure and privilege to be able to speak with you for the last 4 weeks. And I appreciate Vic giving me the opportunity to do so. And I would encourage you to, as you already are, take leadership seriously and understand that, that leadership is the ability to influence. And as we grow in our character and we grow in our skills, it's going to enable us to become better and better influencers of people around us, which is going to enable us to become the kinds of leaders we want to be and to take our organizations to the levels that we want to take them to. So, folks, with that, we're going to call this a wrap, and we're going to be done with the four sessions, Secrets of Influence, Secrets of Leadership. Okay? Thanks a lot, folks. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye.